When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And this is a roasted broccoli. So it's different broccolis, different flavor profiles, and all of them are all kind of unique and interesting. With a broccoli stem pesto on the bottom. So we take the stems, we peel them down, blanch them, and then make sort of a traditional pesto, but instead of basil, we use broccoli.
Yeah.
Right. So it's got Parmesan cheese and pine nuts and garlic and all kinds of fun stuff. It's like layers to that pie once you start to get into it. But I think these are really nice.
Are we gonna be able to nap here after the podcast?
Yes, totally, totally. It's a nice big booth, and you can stretch out however you want.
Okay. All right. Welcome to Total SF, Heather Knight, and our Tyler Florence episode, and the best meal we've had related to any kind of Chronicle Total SF function.
Even better than election night pizza.
So let's list where we have recorded podcasts. Ferris wheel, Hunter Pence's condo, paddleboarding and Sutra Tower,
right?
Roof of a drag club. Mm-hmm. What are some other?
Top of Mount Davidson, cable car barn, lots of parks. We've been to like every park there is.
Yeah. Now add Joe Lacob's private like corner booth at Miller and Lux at Chase Center to it.
Yes, that was so fun. We walked into this restaurant not really knowing what we were getting into, and they were so welcoming and nice and said, you can record anywhere you like, but how about this booth, number 44, where Joe Lacob sits before games, and he doesn't let anybody else sit there, but you can record here with Tyler Florence if you want to while we all have lunch. I was like, I'm getting paid for this?
Yes, totally. I mean, same feeling. And then when the food came, that's another thing. You're going to hear us eating a lot during this podcast.
It might be gross. I hope not.
I'm going to try to do what I can with the post-production editing to get Heather and I just like totally stuffing our faces out of this podcast. The food was a bonus because I was super excited to meet Tyler Florence. He's this national figure. I learned about him through Food Network, but also has become this local figure as well. And I think of him as a San Franciscan and a Bay Area person as much as I think of him as this national figure.
Yeah, super talented guy. Also really nice and had a lot of interesting things to say about living in the Bay Area, riding his motorcycle. We had some fun lightning round questions, all the while eating this amazing steak. Yes. I tried to divert my face away from the microphone as I was chewing, but I'm not sure how successful it was.
Well, we talk about Miller and Lux. There's a lot of history in this episode, the history of Henry Miller and Charles Lux, who I did not know about until we ended up in Miller and Lux, the steakhouse. We also talk about a little bit about the fires. Tyler Florence, a lot of people don't know this, he made a documentary about the 2017 fires, which was also kind of a love letter to restaurateurs and winemakers in the area, and just a good, chill episode with Heather and I eating a lot. I'm Peter Hartlob here with Heather Knight, ready to take a nap after eating all the steak, and this is Total SF.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, hello, Tyler, and welcome to your steakhouse. Thank you for having us here. Is this really Joe Lacob's seats that we're
yes,
in here? Are we
yes.
in his booth?
We are in table 44. This is holy ground. This is Joe's booth. Nobody sits here unless Joe approves a reservation.
Oh, my gosh.
And other than that, it's sort of since empty because it's just, you know, out of respect for Joe and the team and his kind of contribution with what we're doing here at the restaurant. And so, you know, this is a very special booth you're sitting in today.
Wow. Well, I'm glad we got permission.
That's right. That's right.
So at what part of planning or construction of Chase Center did you start thinking that you wanted to be a part of this?
Well, we started talking about this with the Warriors back in, I guess it was like 2017. It goes back a while. And been friends with the Lakers and been friends with management for a minute. Oh, thank you so much. This is our green peppercorn bordelaise sauce. To kind of go over. Oh, we're eating steak, by the way.
Nice.
Jumping and joining us right on the table right now. We have a 45-day dry-aged tomahawk that I'm slowly pouring bordelaise sauce, green peppercorn bordelaise sauce over top of. So you guys get a chance to kind of tuck into that. You can't come to the restaurant and not experience our steak. So, but yeah, so we started talking about this back in Oakland, and we had some really great ideas for, you know, the Oracle Arena back in the day, and we found out that the ideas were too good to execute there because I knew they were leaving anyway. So we decided that we're going to save them for the new project. Mm-hmm. So we said, okay, we're doing a restaurant together. We kicked around a couple different angles on it and, you know, concluded that steak was, you know, everybody's favorite. So American Steakhouse was the theme. And then the exciting thing about the name itself, like where the arena sits right now, I love doing research on projects like this, especially when it comes to naming restaurants and naming brands. So where the arena sits right now, from 1860 all the way to the 1906 earthquake, used to be the largest meatpacking district on the west coast of the United States, and it was called Butcherstown. And the company that had the largest footprint inside Butcherstown was called Miller & Lux. And it was these two gentlemen that came from Germany, and they were butchers by trade, Henry Miller and Charles Lux. And they came to the west coast because of the gold rush, and that's where the money was. And they opened up their first butcher shop here in San Francisco, and then ultimately they opened up here in Butcherstown. And they became, you know, like such a big deal. By the time they retired, they had one contiguous piece of property from San Francisco all the way down to Bakersfield, and they were known as the Cattle Kings of California. And it was just such an amazing story. There's been books written about them. And so once we stumbled across that brand, we did a lot of research to make sure we could, you know, trademark and protect it and that kind of thing. But you know, I think Miller & Lux is a fabulous chance to tell a story from, you know, a cattle ranching story, a California story, an immigrant story, an agricultural story here in the state. Really, really proud of what we're doing right now. And, you know, our short-term goal is just to be the best steakhouse in the city of San Francisco. And then we'll start to expand from there.
Yeah.
Well, Peter found some stories about Miller & Lux in our Chronicle archive.
Yeah, because we've been around since 1865, so I found actually Henry Miller's obituary. Can I read a little bit of it to you here? Henry Miller, listed among California's most notable men who rose from the humble job of a butcher boy in San Francisco to the position of millionaire cattle king of the West, died yesterday afternoon in his 90th year at the home of his only daughter, Miss J. Leroy Nickel, at 2101 Laguna Street. I looked it up. It's an apartment building now. It has been said that the secret of the rise of Henry Miller to the position of millionaire cattle baron was that he possessed a remarkable knowledge of cattle and an equally remarkable knowledge of men. He owned at the time of his death a Western empire twice the size of Belgium. Take away from California the Miller holdings, and one would take away a large-sized portion of the state, and the same statement holds true for Nevada and Oregon.
Isn't that wild?
He was Henry, I think it was Kreiser was his last name.
Yeah, exactly.
And he came from New York to San Francisco and had to buy a ticket to come here. He had like $6 when he showed up. And the ticket that he got was non-transferable. Mm-hmm. And the guy's name was Henry Miller who sold it to him.
Yep.
So he just adopted that name and never changed it, because
and then had it legally changed once he got to California.
Yeah,
and turned it, and so he became that persona of what that person is.
Wow.
And isn't that the great thing about America?
Yeah,
you can be whoever you want to be when you get here, right? And so I just think it's such a fabulous story, and we're honored to carry the torch and to talk about our founders, you know, with what their legacy was, and turn it to a great restaurant.
I also think like he lived to 90. So that's got to say something about eating steak.
Everybody.
I mean, this guy's probably eating steak because he was when Lux was in San Francisco doing the books and Miller's out roaming around.
Yeah.
I think you can eat steak every day. And 90 years old in 1916.
Well, hi, Dottie. Will you get a little bit of steak and side dishes on everybody's plate for us? Do you mind?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So are you a big Warriors fan?
Big Warriors fan. And that's the great thing about the partnership here. You know, pandemic aside, this has been a storybook launch. And for us to, you know, come in and really, I think, show the city of San Francisco a good time and to be affiliated with the Warriors, where you know this is the spot. Like we have got 160 people on the books tonight. You know, most people coming in for the game.
Do you get to go to the game a lot, or are you stuck here?
Kind of both, right? So it depends on the day. If we do get like a little lull in the reservation windows, right? Because like on game days, for 7:30 games, we open up at 4:30 and we're booked at 4:30.
Wow.
We're busy at 4:30, right? And as a matter of fact, Joe Montana's coming tonight at 5:30. He and Jennifer.
Maybe we should come back.
You should. It's a scene. It's a scene for sure. And so there's a, you know, big migration. As a matter of fact, we have a sneaky back door from the restaurant that goes straight into the arena.
Oh, nice.
That I built for like Joe Lacob and about 10 other people, to be honest with you. But he liked it so much. He just wanted to put a ticket agent back there and kind of open up for everybody. So it's kind of this fun thing. If you know about it, you know about it. But as soon as you you know, finish up your dinner, you're 50 steps into the arena.
Wow. Are you walking through the kitchen? Is it like Goodfellas, like the Steadicam shot?
It's funny you bring that up because that was exactly my vision when I built that back door entrance into the arena. Was one of the greatest scenes in cinematic history with Martin Scorsese.
Yeah,
with Goodfellas when they walk in the back door of the Copacabana and that one long Steadicam shot, unedited, you know, one take. I just thought it was kind of fun because like Joe's office is kind of right down the hallway.
Yeah,
and then when you walk in, you know. I just wanted for him to be able to get into the restaurant and get into the arena without necessarily having to be bothered with people if he didn't want to. But it just turned out to be this really kind of fun, sneaky backdoor entrance. So that's exactly where that came from.
Yeah.
Awesome. And do you have a favorite Warriors player and have any of them come over to eat before the
game? Most of the players have been here, which is really exciting. The Currys have been in a lot. You know, Draymond's been in a bunch. Clay's been in a bunch. Clay had his birthday party here last March, which was just a scene. And, you know, Jonathan Kuminga comes in a bunch. Iguodala comes in a bunch. So it's nice to be able to have this place for them as a clubhouse. After the game. Also, because we're not open for lunch, sometimes the Warrior players will use this as their meeting facility to come in and have, you know, private meetings with their agents and marketing folks themselves personally. So we're here for them.
First time visiting in San Francisco, do you remember it? Did you come as a kid or?
Well, the first time I came to San Francisco, I was 19 years old, and I was a huge Grateful Dead fan. And I remember so right now what's being presented in front of you, so all the folks are listening,
God,
right?
So
this is
so
like
good.
Sort of a greatest hits plate of all of our amazing flavors, right? So our 45 day dredge, covered with our green peppercorn bordelaise, and then also our potato puree, our broccolis, and also our cream spinach. So it's a nice little flavor Miller and Lux right there for you. Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Two rude things I'm going to do right now.
Yeah.
Can I keep my headphones on just so I can keep getting the levels here?
Yeah.
I feel horrible about it.
No, please do.
This looks fantastic. Also, we're going to take photos. Is that?
Yeah.
Does that drive you crazy?
Not at
when
all.
People
Not
are
all.
Taking photos?
No, I mean, it's definitely part of the show, you know, being here in the restaurant. And we're so excited that our product is exciting enough that people want to take pictures of it in the first place. So, yeah, we're grateful. Please
so
do.
Isn't
that yummy?
Yeah.
We just want to be the best steakhouse in the city of San Francisco, you know, and that's sort of like the short-term goal. We're opening up two new restaurants right now. We're opening up at the Four Seasons in Hualalai in Kona in Hawaii. And we're also opening up at the Four Seasons in Vail. So we're opening up two new Miller & Lux restaurants right now.
Maybe we need to think of a reason to go visit those restaurants.
Yeah, really.
Exactly. So let me get back to the
So you were 19.
Yeah, so I was 19 years old. So I was getting ready to go into culinary school. I was living in Charleston at the time. And my girlfriend's parents were going to San Francisco, and I can't exactly remember why. They were photographers. I think it was some sort of convention or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. But they invited their daughter's boyfriend, me, to go on a trip out to the West Coast. And it was the first time I'd been here before. And I remember sort of getting off the plane and that deep inhale of some of the cleanest air in the world. And I remember that being something that I still celebrate today, always kind of, because I travel a lot for a living. The second I get off the airplane and kind of gets like that fresh air spot where I can kind of breathe in San Francisco, I always felt like I could breathe here. And it was very relaxing. And the weather is just my jam. I grew up in the South where it's like constantly hot and humid. And to be able to kind of roll into San Francisco and really kind of celebrate the weather and then start celebrating the culture. Right. And so I love the history of San Francisco, which has always been about bubble and burst, to be honest with you, right? It's always been something that's like big and then it goes away and the next cycle comes up all the way from the gold rush to, you know, to the the farm to table movement with Alice Waters, and then, you know, tech 1.0, then tech 2.0, and then kind of where we are now, which is sort of an interesting crossroad of challenges in the city. We're definitely having some for sure right now. But it's always this place that seems to bounce back and come back better than ever, which is really great. And so like, I think the first time I got a chance to come here was like a wide-eyed, enthusiastic young chef. Mm-hmm. I'd been in the restaurant business for a handful of years and really having some spectacular meals and really kind of tasting what that farm to table, having those light bulb moments, right? Where you really taste what everyone's talking about and kind of live the hype of, you know, the produce, which is just the best in the world.
I mean,
the best in the world, right? The product is the best in the world. Exactly. And so that's what I really loved here as well. And you know, and then kind of going back to, you know, I was in South Carolina, I went to culinary school there, and then I was in New York City for 15 years and always had this thing about, you know, living in California. Always, and it was that first trip when I was 19 that sort of planted the seed of what I thought was, you know, someplace I knew I was going to end up, you know, at some point in my life, in my career. And then, so we moved here in 07 with my lovely wife, Tolan, and we have three kids now. And
how old are your kids?
My oldest is 26. He's a cybersecurity engineer with Google. And then we have a 15-year-old who is playing football at Redwood. And then we have our baby girl, a daughter, is 14. She's in eighth grade, and she's applying for high school right now.
Great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, I think LA and New York are kind of the company towns. Is it hard to work out of here? Does it mean a lot of extra flights?
It can be. It can be. I mean, like, so LA was honestly going to be our first choice to when we moved to California. Because Tolan lived in LA for maybe like 6 or 7 years or so. She was Ryan Seacrest's executive producer with his radio show when they got their first number one book.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like 25. She was one of the youngest marketing executives with Viacom. And she, you know, and she still has that like huge hustler spirit. I mean, she's one of my, you know, my wife, but also one of my best friends, one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. And so when we just first were thinking about moving to California, LA was our first thought. And then we got there and it was like 2000, I guess it was 2004. No, I'm sorry. I take it back. It was 2007. And we were trying to figure out kind of what our first big move was going to be. And we just couldn't find a house that we loved. Everything that we looked at felt cheesy, or it felt like a tear down the valley. Like, how depressing is that? Like, you can buy a house, but it's a tear down the valley. So then we started looking at, you know, inventory up here in Northern California. And then it was just this like magical idea that we had, you know, like with the wine country being so close to San Francisco and San Francisco being a real legit legacy restaurant food town, it felt like a nice place to put our roots down. So we decided to, and plus she's from Marin County anyway. And so she went to TAM High and her parents live in Marin. So we had like a nice big support system to be here in the first place. So getting here and just really kind of putting our roots down felt like the right thing to do from minute one. And we've been here ever since. And it was the best move I've ever made in my life. And love being in Northern California.
Glad you're here, because this is so good.
<I know. laughs>
Oh my God.
Your eyes are rolling back in your head. That is my payment for what we do when we see our guests roll their eyes back in their head with how good it is. Because I know it's great, and I love to share that with everybody.
And I love the part that I get to go home, and when my wife asks me, I'm like, I had kale. You know, we kept it.
Yeah,
kept it pretty healthy.
We had kale.
You know, we had kale.
Yeah,
kale.
Yeah, there's a little cream in that, but not much. Yeah,
not much.
A little bit. Right. But we just love what we do, and you know, and I like, you know, building restaurants so you can describe with one word. I just think it's a smart way to introduce what you want to do to a big audience, and for it to be universally popular, right? So we love, you know, restaurants like steak, Italian, sushi, that you can easily describe. So once you say that, everybody's like, I'm in, you got me, right? Versus having to say, well, it's kind of like, you know, CalMed, small plates, farm to table, you know, locally sourced. Like, I just don't even know what that is necessarily.
Yeah.
So I think we just want to come up like, we're steak. We do all that anyway, but we don't necessarily have to, you know, need to wear the t-shirt,
right,
to be able to express all that. So, but you know, like it's the best steakhouse in the city of San Francisco. So we're building it to be, and that's the story.
What you just said reminds me that I love jobs that can also be summed up in one word, like chef, journalist. There's so many jobs right now that you're like, wait, what do you do?
What do you
do
for a living?
Get it.
Exactly. What is it exactly you do?
Keep it simple.
I still don't know. Yeah. We both interviewed Mark Benioff many times. I can't tell you what he does. I can kind of tell you what Salesforce does, but it would take me a long time and I'd get like half of it wrong.
Yeah.
Mark is a good friend. He's a great leader. He's a great advocate for San Francisco. He is such a great like connector. That's one of his like many secret powers. But he's such a fabulous guy. And we got a chance to cook for him for Dreamforce this year at the top floor of the Salesforce building, which is such a marvel of engineering.
He's been on this podcast too. So he's great. He's a great guy.
Yeah, we appreciate what he does. I coach youth basketball. I've had two different times where they tell me like, oh, Salesforce sponsored your team. And I didn't ask or they wow. just did it. Like, that's I guess nice. Like one of the parents has some connection to Salesforce and they'll just sponsor any team. And there's so many little things like that that happen with Salesforce that, you know, if you live here, you kind of know, okay, they're community oriented. But
we'll be right back after this short break.
I know it's 5 years old, but I wanted to ask you about Uncrushable, the movie that you directed in 2017. And we were talking about, you know, your connection to this area, but filming a documentary about the fires in Napa and Sonoma, you know, what went into that decision and how did that kind of change you as a restaurateur and a local?
It was a very, very scary moment in Northern California back in 2017. And there's been so many fires. It's hard to even describe which fire it was, right? But was this the Wine Country fire that specifically took out parts of northern Napa, a lot of Calistoga, and then a lot of like Rohnert Park into Santa Rosa. It jumped the 101 and connected Napa and Sonoma counties. And it was, I think, got 1,100 buildings burned, 45 people lost their lives. And so we had a very super tiny budget and it was myself and about four filmmakers. I mean, I've been in television for 26 years, so I got a pretty big Rolodex of just, you know, Emmy Award winning cinematographers that shoot television full time for a living. So I got a pick of some pretty top talent. And so called in some favors, had some people kind of, you know, move into a hotel for about 4 weeks while we shot everything. And we started telling the stories of the local community on what it meant to recognize that other people hurt. And to what can we do as a community to make sure that we're always solidified with a group consciousness that we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. And so we put together this film that really kind of told that story from a first person perspective. And we interviewed, you know, teachers and firefighters and
you had the
locals.
Safari people in it. I remember
from Sonoma County and that was
Safari West,
which was an amazing story and a scary story too. Mm-hmm. Cause the gentleman that owns it, he had gotten a phone call from, one of his, caretakers at the zoo. And they said, listen, there's a fire on your hill. You should be aware of that. And then by the time he had gotten out of bed, put on a pair of boots, grabbed his wife, it was less than 10 minutes. And less than 10 minutes, his house is on fire and his house burned to the ground. I've done some cool stuff in my life. It was probably the project that had the biggest impact on my life personally, to be able to kind of connect with people and to really just feel like I'm here. You know, it was important.
Yeah, well, my family lives up there and I remember seeing it. You know, when it came out.
Oh, you saw the film? Oh, great.
Yeah, okay. I mean, back then.
Sure.
And I appreciated it. I mean, I like the positivity, too, because there was this element. A lot of the people that I'm sure we were both talking to were like, okay, on one hand, this is a horrible thing, and we need to prepare for the next one. On the other hand, we need to get people back here. I mean, small businesses are losing money. Mm-hmm. And there was that element of rebuilding, too. Do you in a like season like this, when the rain comes, do you just have a little bit of a sigh of relief that
don't
we've
all?
Gotten through the fire season and relatively unscathed?
Yeah, don't we all?
Yeah, I sure do. Come on.
It's this level of anxiety that really kind of starts up around, you know, the end of September, 1st of October, because that's really sort of the height of it. And what's really kind of heartbreaking, because like it's the most beautiful weather here in Northern California, right? It's our summer. You know, we have this like kind of late Indian summer that happens between September and October. And it's also harvest season up in Napa. So you have this, you know, where Napa really comes to life and kind of celebrating what they do at a high level. And so the entire wine country region between Napa and Sonoma, you know, they're pulling grapes, they're pressing, they're crushing. The entire area smells like, you know, fresh yeast. You can, it smells like wine being made, which is crazy. Yeah. And it's a really beautiful part of our culture here in Northern California. And now there's an overlay of anxiety that kind of comes along with that, that to hope that this doesn't, you know, become a year that they'll lose part of their crop, right? And so it's like that kind of thing. As soon as it starts to rain, everybody sighs a deep relief that we got through this one relatively unscathed. We had some fires this year, but mild in comparison.
Yeah. Well, you also run the Wayfair Tavern in the heart of the financial district. And how is business during the pandemic? Is it coming back? And what do you foresee for downtown San Francisco?
Downtown San Francisco is really starting to pop. There's areas that I think will... You know, we're sort of in this tear between culture and commerce, between restaurants and retail and rent and that kind of thing. And so I think we're, you know, the business model is broken. There's no doubt about it. Restaurants can barely survive what it costs to be in business here in San Francisco. And we could have a whole separate podcast on that. But I think that the culture, you know, restaurants are culture. Restaurants is a strong sense of vitality. In a city, it's a point of strength, and it's this braggable thing that San Francisco's always had, and to be really proud of our food culture here. And when that becomes strained and under stress from a lot of different reasons, the pandemic it just did a doozy on everybody, specifically in the financial district, and still to a lot of we're busy for dinner. Lunches are starting to come back, which is great. But what I really like about the transition from outdoor dining back to indoor dining is the fact that we can keep our park let for two additional years. So that's like 80 additional seats inside the restaurant, which is like opening up a restaurant and a restaurant you already opened. So those additional seats have given us such a revenue boost. They're actually making more money this year than we made in 19, which is wonderful. Yeah. So we're coming out of it with our head high. You know, it was some real dark days in the business. We went from 130 employees down to about 13.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, as the owner of the restaurant, we took zero distribution. Any money that kind of came in went to go pay our staff that we held on to. And had to furlough a lot of people, which is heartbreaking. And we didn't get them all back. But we have now a new generation of associates at Wayfair Tavern. They get a chance to, you know, to celebrate the good times with that restaurant because we're back and busier than ever, which
That's great.
Well, I got to ask you before we close with the lightning round. Can you please talk about the caviar donut? Where did that come from? How many people buy it?
Do you want one?
Yeah.
I mean, yell in the microphone. I'll get them.
That's all right.
Because I think we're going to start to make them now. Yeah. So this is a luxury restaurant, right? Like Miller and Lux is a luxury restaurant. It's not inexpensive to come here, right? But what you're going to get is a spectacular level of service and a really, really beautiful room and the best steak of your life, right? So all the bells and whistles come along with that storyline. You know, 45-day dry age, black truffles from Perigord, caviar from some of the finest places in the world. And so when we were talking about caviar service, we were really thinking, okay, how do you present that? Because there's lots of ways to kind of get that across. When we're a house, because I'm not trying to be bougie, but we eat caviar from time to time. And we'll have a tin, you know, in the fridge. I'll crack it open. I'll whip some creme fraiche and I'll open up a bag of Ruffles. And that's literally, that's the Marin County dinner party.
That's good.
That's the Marin County dinner party right there, right? And you just eat it over eat it on the counter, and everybody get a chance to share. But here at the restaurant, it needs to be sort of a presentation, really sort of a ceremony. So, you know, it's either something crispy or it's something like a Bellini, like a Ghirardenco, which is one of the world's greatest bites of food. So we were kind of playing around with this and it popped up in a meeting. Somebody said caviar donuts and I'm like, the brakes just went on. Like, are you joking me? You know, it's the two great tastes. It tastes great together. It's really salty and sweet, you know, and from a chef's perspective, you can never blow that. It always tastes good, you know, obviously there's peanut butter brittle, which is salty and sweet, but salty and sweet can be 100,000 different combinations of things that are just like Thai food is salty sweet, right? Like that just always plays, right? So we started working on a donut and then we wanted it to be a filled donut and then, you know, put the caviar on top of that. And I think it's an exquisite bite of food. It's really, really nice. So it's a great way to, you know, kick off an experience here. There's five that comes to an order, and everybody gets a chance to have like a really opulent bite of food. So we're really proud of that. Huh. It's fun.
Well, you survived our very serious questions, and now it's time for our lightning round.
Okay, yep.
Where's your favorite place in the Bay Area to get a burrito?
This is going to sound crazy, and it's going to make me sound very suburban, but I have teenage kids. Uh-huh. and World Wrap. I know this is going to sound kind of weird, but World Wrap in Marin County in, okay, Puerto Madera. Mm-hmm. That's where my kids go, and I think it's a really good wrap. I know it's not a burrito per, mm-hmm, se, but you know, there's fantastic places in the Mission that, yeah, I think are really fantastic. And I think there's lots of really good. You know, I don't get out much, to be honest with you, right? I'm either at my house or taking the kids someplace or on an airplane. You know, go and shoot, yeah, to shooting television. So I don't unfortunately I don't get a chance to like do like the big crawls, right? Yeah. Like I know where all the big burritos are, but like, look, you tell me, where's the best burrito? And
I love La Corneta in, yeah, Glen, sure, Park, where I live. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, we record podcasts in Glen Park Canyon, partly so she can walk there, but also
I love that. Oh, that's great.
Also, we always go. It's a great Mexican
place. And they
place.
Have a great parklet. We're, yeah, big fans of parklets.
And to me, like, that's what I also love about San Francisco, kind of like knowing how much time I have in the day. Like right now, as we're talking about this, like no joke, we're doing four or five things at the same time.
Yeah.
So we always have like really busy days. And I love to get a chance to go explore, you know, almost being a tourist, yeah, in the city where you live in. Because, yeah, I'm always like trying new things in new places. So I love the insight.
Okay, La Tapatia, yeah, in South San Francisco is another big one.
La Tapatia is really good. I've actually been there.
You've been there. Yeah, okay, my mom's Mexican, really, and yeah, I grew up on the peninsula, and we would go up there to get our carnitas and,
yeah,
stuff.
So, yeah, I, yeah, love that. That's great.
I have a feeling we might be sitting in it, but where's your favorite place in the city to get a stiff drink?
You know, I think Wafer Tavern has really great, okay, drinks. And I think Miller and Lux, I think our program here is pretty spectacular. That being said, I love Trick Dog. And, uh-huh, you know, that's a really great place.
What's your favorite movie filmed in San Francisco or the Bay Area?
I would say Bullet. I think Steve McQueen.
Good choice.
You know, I think I'm just a big fan of that film. I've seen it 100 times. Yeah. I think that was pretty amazing. Huge Hitchcock fan. Uh-huh. So I think when you kind of get into that level of, you know, insight, I think those are pretty amazing too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd recommend the pairing of Bullet and the steak.
Oh,
I'm,
yeah,
eating.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You kind of got this old school San Francisco vibe,
and that's what I love. I mean, I'm not saying I was born in the wrong era, but I think that mid century vibe is just kind of my jam.
Yeah,
you know, like
I
love that. I always kind of would like to think I'm a preservationist when, uh-huh, it comes to great restaurants, and to really kind of celebrate. You know, the interesting thing about it, because I'm 51 years old, right? And so when I joined Food Network in 1996. You know, it was Emeril and it was Bobby and it was Ming and it was Mario. And so I was definitely like probably 12 to 15 years younger than those guys. So I was like the first of the new, and now I'm kind of like the last of the old, right? And so I remember like really beautiful formal service in restaurants that we want to bring back. I think to me, like where you go out and you can come as casual as you want to, but that level of service and experience, mm-hmm, I think it's where we should all live in the hospitality, yeah, world, right?
So besides one of your own restaurants, what's your favorite restaurant in San Francisco?
My favorite
restaurant.
Yeah, right. My favorite restaurant in San Francisco. So, God, let me think about this. I think Yak Sing is always just like, uh-huh, so incredible. I mean, when it comes to dim sum, I think you got to break it down into like, you know, like categories, right? It's hard to say like there's one.
Yeah.
I think Danko is always just a really magical night out. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that they never changes the menu.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like with laser execution.
Service
is so incredibly good. Mm-hmm. I think it's really fun. I love Saison. I think Saison's really an amazing Michelin 3-star experience. I love Bennu. I think it's really great as well. Angler, which is another restaurant in the Saison family, which is, I think, a spectacular dining experience. What else is really great? Like, you know, like dive bars. I mean, like to me, mm-hmm, I think there's so many great restaurants in San Francisco that you can kind of pick and choose and kind of get lost and never really run out of gas with, you know, new places you're always discovering, even if the place has been here for 50, 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
But like, I think Tadich is great.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tadich is awesome. I mean, and especially for a new generation, I bet a lot of young people, have never heard of Tadich or even, you know how great the Sand Dabs are when you get there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those restaurants are really special. They are for me.
You host the Great Food Truck Race. So do you have a favorite Bay Area food truck?
God, will you guys tell me like what, because again, this is going to sound so weird, but like I live in my own little bubble sometimes. Right. So like when we travel, with the Great Food Truck Race, we're in pre-production right now for season 16. And that is shot predominantly in Los Angeles. So mm-hmm. we're down there, for about four or five weeks when we shoot that. And then when I come back, I kind of like clock out of the food truck world mm-hmm. and kind of get back in my own little restaurant bubble. And I don't know if I really have a bunch of intersections where I bump in. I know this is kind of weird as a guy like celebrates food trucks. Sorry, but because I should. But you guys tell me what are some things that food trucks that people should look out for?
Al Pastor Poppy is excellent. Yeah. I mean, it's actual Al Pastor. They've got the rig up, the rack up, and they're cutting it in front of you.
That's awesome.
That's got to be probably my number one.
Uh-huh. I think Roller Roadie is fire.
Really good.
I think Roller Roadie at the farmer's market every weekend, mm-hmm. I think that's just as good as it gets. Like the roasted chicken, porchetta, over potatoes and stuff, that's fantastic.
Senor Sisig is worth the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's always a line.
Worth the line. I love it. Yeah. That's great. Good way
to... So you're also an avid motorcycle rider. What's the best ride in the Bay Area?
I would say arguably one of the best rides in the country. It's just taking up the old Highway 1. Starting from Tam Valley, you actually just start to climb your way through the flats area and almost near Muir Beach, and then you take a left on the next little fork in the road, and then you start to climb all the way up towards the top, and then overlooking the Pacific Ocean, and then wind your way down towards Stinson Beach, and then keep on going. And then I think all the way up to Marshall and Jenner, mm-hmm. And then find some like nice place to kind of cross over and find the 101. Usually we get there and the sun's going down. That's one of the most beautiful rides in the world. And it's a real head cleaner for me.
Last question. What is one thing you always make sure to squeeze into your busy day?
I think a sense of gratitude. To me, the idea of, oh, I got to go to work, right? I get to go to work. Right. I have to take this phone call. I get to make this phone call. I get to do this podcast today. And that to me is something that I never, ever take for granted. Because I've been around so long and I've done so many things and I've been part of like the roller coaster of success and then kind of coming in a favor and out of favor and kind of what you do. And I'm a chef. Like, this is what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to know that I'll be able to do this for the rest of my life and really kind of celebrate culture and cities. And we're expanding. We're doing two new Miller & Lux mm-hmm. restaurants, one in Hawaii and one in Vail. And to be able to have a moment where you sort of clean your head out and go, okay, I know you're busy today, mm-hmm. right? I know this is a lot to work on. I know you've got, 100 people to talk to today, but mm-hmm. you get a chance to do that today. And if you ask for it, you can't complain. Mm-hmm. And that to me is what I think I try to just like take 5 minutes to myself and go like, today's going to be awesome. And you get a chance to do this. Let's go.
Well, thank you so much for having us. This was delicious.
Thank you. This was fantastic. It was good. As you can tell, we were pretty excited about it. I can't believe we ate that whole thing while we
It will clean your plate, club. Congratulations. You left the spot. You left a little on the plate, so
still going.
Try harder next time.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
Thank you for listening to the San Francisco Chronicle. Our music today is from the Sunset Shipwrecks, Castro organ player David Hegarty, and cable car bell ringing from 8-time champion Byron Cobb. Support Total SF and the newsroom that creates it by investing in a digital Chronicle edition. It's less expensive than you think at sfchronicle.com/pod.
Loved it. I miss that so much.